Welcome to Family Guide Ons, the podcast created by military spouses for military spouses. We're the ones holding down the home front during deployments, state activations, and everything in between. Here, we have honest conversations about the realities of military life, the highs, the hard moments, and the strength it takes to keep moving forward. Whether you're new to the military community or a seasoned spouse who's seen it all, Family Guide Ons is your place for connection, support, and real conversations. Because no one understands this life like the ones living it right beside them. This is Family Guide Ons. Fall in.
So welcome to Family Guide Ons. I'm Charlotte Stillwell. I have been a military spouse of almost 31 years. I'm a Blue Star mom of a son who is currently serving on active duty. And I'm also a Gold Star child. My father died during the Vietnam conflict.
And I'm Michelle Matheny, military spouse of 14 years. I have three young girls at home, and I am a volunteer with my husband's unit's Soldier and Family Readiness Group, and a huge supporter of our military in general.
Hi, I'm Kathy Bridgers, and I'm a military spouse of 28 years and a military mom for the past 8 years of my son, Austin, and then I also have a daughter, Bailey, who's a physical therapist. Today, in this podcast, we're talking about a topic that many people think they understand, but most don't know what they think they know about the National Guard and all that it entails to be a part of the National Guard. So we want to make sure that you know that you're seen, those of you who are Guard members, family members, and Guard members, and that we understand all of the things that are being tasked on you and the support that you have to give your families and all the different avenues that they are being pulled.
Yeah, when most people hear National Guard, they think the stereotypical 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, but it is really so much more than that. And the scope and the width of their mission, depending on what's going on, can be so big.
So today's episode is titled The National Guard, More Than You Think. Because once you're connected to the Guard, whether as a service member, a spouse, a family member, or just a friend, you begin to see how much responsibility and commitment it really involves. So think of this as your talking points episode of the podcast, where we're going to give you some information about just what it is that the Guard does. And before we get started on that, I thought it would be kind of appropriate to explain how we came about this topic. When we first began the podcast, we were lucky enough to have several media outlets interview us, and they wanted to hear about the podcast. They wanted to hear, about the National Guard and all that we were hoping to highlight. And after a couple of those interviews, we came away thinking, do they really know what all of the things are that the National Guard is involved in? So we got to talking about it. And here we are.
Absolutely. So I think to kind of start off, it's what do most people think the Guard is? And as I mentioned already, I think you hear that 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, that is what most people think of when they think of the Guard. And in reality, that is just the bare minimum training requirements for National Guard, no matter, where you're involved with them at. So it is so much more than that. I mean, when I think back to all of the additional trainings and military schools, other missions within the state, and then sometimes, true full deployments, whether that be to someplace else in this country or to another country, it takes up a lot more time and adds a lot more commitment than most people even know about. We want to kind of go through some of those different things today. The state emergencies, state activations, the federal mission that they can be called up for, and kind of what that means for families and Guard members that have other commitments and responsibilities as well.
I think even active duty people don't understand what the National Guard does. Because I know for me, coming from the active duty, when we switched to the Guard, I thought, okay, things are going to get easier. It's going to slow down. He's not going to be deployed as much. There won't be as many trainings. Well, I think it actually is more since we've been in the Guard than it was when we were in the active duty. There's been more deployments, more trainings, more time away from home than there was when we were in the active duty Air Force.
And I think a part of that is because it's more disruptive to your normal life, right? Because it's not their only responsibility then, maybe. You know, they're doing, they have another job, they're doing something else, or trainings aren't quite as accessible because they're not on an active duty military installation where a lot of those things happen. So, quote unquote, it's not a part of your normal rhythm of life, but it is when you factor in all the things that need to happen.
Well, that's right, because they're leaving their home to do the job, that to do the trainings, or to be deployed. So you're right, it is disruptive. Mm-hmm. I think that many people don't understand that the fundamental purpose of the National Guard is to fight our nation's wars. And I think that takes a lot of people by surprise. Yeah, they know our soldiers and airmen get deployed. They don't necessarily understand it is for combat reasons. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'd like to just kind of point out that just under, Rob says it's approximately 47% of the U.S. Army's combat power is in the National Guard. You know, these combat assets include tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, helicopters, field artillery, and men and women. So think about that. 47%, that's just under half of the Army's assets lie in the citizen, which is important, the citizen soldiers of our country. And I'm talking about the men and women who live next door to us. I'm talking about the men and women that we work with, whose children go to our schools, the men and women who go to our churches, and that's big. I mean, that's really pretty impressive.
And they're truly embedded in the community because they're not just here for 3 years and then on to the next base. Mm-hmm. When you're on a guard base, you're living there.
To kind of follow that thought up, this military structure is by design and has its roots in the founding of our nation. The reason being is that it makes it politically harder to send troops to fight foreign wars when the burden is being felt in all the towns across our country, because it is our neighbors. It is our family members. It's not this removed force that's going to fight. And, you know, when your everyday citizen feels it, it's part of our purpose and part of our makeup to kind of keep our leaders in check.
Right, kind of a checks and balances of yes. that power to do that.
So. Absolutely, and for that reason, mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to understand that the National Guard isn't just an add-on to any military branch. They serve a very vital role.
Yeah, I had no idea that the percentage was that large. Until
massive.
We were talking mm-hmm. about that. I knew it was a big part, but mm-hmm. say almost 50%. Like that's... Mm-hmm. That's significant.
It is.
And on the Air Guard side, there are 25 fighter squadrons of the total 73
wow.
fighter squadrons in the nation. And they are 21% of the total Air Force, 30% of the U.S. total combat power. They're responsible for 94% of the homeland defense air combat mission, using only 7% of the Air Force's total budget. So think about
that's
that.
Bad.
They're doing
that's
it
bad.
On a dime. They're taking mm-hmm. a huge percentage of the fight and the work, but working on a very small mm-hmm. budget. And they also have an alert mission. And on that alert mission, it's spread out on several bases. They have to have people, our personnel there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in case there's an emergency and the jets have to be ready to fly within minutes mm-hmm. and be in the air. That started, I think, after 9/11, to make sure that we had people in country that were ready to take on an attack in the country. So they have that mission at the South Carolina Air National Guard at McIntyre. They have alert missions, so they have a certain set of pilots that are always in a separate little area, and they're ready to go 24 hours a day, kind of like firefighters mm-hmm. have to be, you know, they have to sleep there and be be ready to go. They use F-15s and F-16s to keep the homeland safe. And the South Carolina Air National Guard has this alert mission on top of their other responsibilities. And the alert mission at McIntyre got the highest rating in the nation when they had their review. And other acknowledgments were that the McIntyre won the top recruiting wing in the nation, as well as their firefighters receiving Firefighters of the Year.
Go Swamp Fox.
So yeah. Even on a small budget,
yeah,
they're kicking it.
Yeah.
So be proud, South Carolina.
Right. I had no idea about the 24-hour alert mission until a few years ago when we were out there for a ceremony or something. And, you know, Bill was kind of giving me the rundown of what all the different areas were and everything. And I was like, huh, that is really, like, interesting. I mean, just right in our own backyard. So it is something to be proud of, the vital role that they, you know, play in case of an emergency. So, and I think most people, when they think of the National Guard, they think just of the state mission.
Right.
So that is what people think, that they're the, you know, the people out there helping during natural disasters and state emergencies. So when there's a hurricane, a flood, a wildfire, a snowstorm, anything that affects our community's ability to operate, they are the first ones, you know, many times out there. I know the hurricane last fall, Helene, they were on ready before it even really happened. You know, my husband is associated with the engineers, so they're very much of the roadway clearing. So, I mean, they're cutting themselves out of their own properties to be able to get to, you know, an armory. But that's a challenge, too. I mean, they're in the community, right? So they have to be able to get where they need to go to do their job. So a lot of times that means they leave before anything ever happens. And that's, you know, that again, affecting the community, it falls on the families. It's mm-hmm. as a military spouse or whatever, like, you are left to prepare for that storm on your own. And I have many very vivid memories of those kind of situations. So it's...
I'm laughing because, yes, that just, in a big way, just, you know, affected us. We had just moved back into a house that we had done some work on, and we had not had any kind of a situation like this happen around us in the upstate. You think hurricanes mm-hmm. and you think low state.
Right.
So I'm calling Rob. Rob's already been in Columbia at the Joint Operations Center, and he had been there for a couple of days. And so the day before, I'm like, honey, where's the water turn off? You know, do I need to, actually, this was during the ice storm. Where's the water turn off? He's like, Charlotte, I don't know. And he's like, it's downstairs somewhere. And he said, if all else fails, go out to the road. And I'm thinking, I don't know about that. And then I said, well, what about a generator? Can we get a generator for the house? And he said, that ship has sailed. They could have a storm is coming through. So I just conflate. I put together two different stories with the hurricane and the
ice storm. It's
hard to
keep them all
straight. But you know, you've got that flurry of activity of, oh my gosh, what have I got to do? You know, we're thinking ahead what he needs to do to get out of the house. I think that this needs to be a podcast before the next season, being prepared.
Yes.
So let's file that away.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with us, the airplanes had to be protected. So anytime any kind of storm came that could damage the airplane, they would send our guys out mm-hmm. with the airplanes. So whether they were deployed or not, we were home alone for every single storm or flood or threat that came through. So you just kind of got used to that. Mm-hmm. I don't think, even though we went through it a lot of times, even this last storm, I didn't feel prepared like I should have been. So I do think it would be a great podcast, but I think what helped for me was I reached out to a friend of mine that was single, didn't have any kids, and said, do you want to come over and ride the storm out with us? And she was like, yes, please. I had two little ones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she helped me hang a blanket over the window, because in this case it was a hurricane, and we prepared the one inside closet we had that was, you know, about the size of a shoebox and put blankets in it and some of the kids' stuffed animals and pulled all the, you know, the coats and everything out of it. And just having another person there, it helped the kids, but mm-hmm. it helped me as well. So, you know, in those situations, it's good to reach out and get somebody to ride the storm with you.
I think one of my first big experiences with a state mission was back in 2018 with Hurricane Florence. which, you know, hit our area in South Carolina pretty hard, more so towards the coast. So I remember, again, that whole staging thing. You know, they have to get there before the problems start so that they can be in place to help. So Bill was gone for over a month mm-hmm. for that one. And, I mean, you know, again, people think like, oh, maybe a weekend, maybe a week or two. No, this was, I want to say it was almost a month and a half before he came home. They were, you know, living out of a hotel that was near their biggest project sites. But we were fairly new in the house that we were in at the time. And so we had a lot of stuff still around, like our garage, you know, 2-car garage was full of not cars, but stuff. Mm-hmm. But he was very concerned because of the layout of our property of like my car being outside. And he was kicking himself like, oh, I can't believe I didn't clear out space in the garage before I left so you could get your car in there. And I was like, I've got it. And he's like, no, Michelle, it's, you know, there's so many big things, boxes, all this stuff. I don't even know where you're going to put it all. And we had maybe like a 2.5-year-old at this time, 3-year-old. And I remember like leading up to it every night before the storm hit, like I'd put her in bed and then I would go out to the garage and I would just start working. And I, you know, pushing boxes around, moving all this stuff. And it probably took 3 days. And on the third, you know, night, I got that car in the garage and I sent him a picture. And I was like, see, I told you nothing to worry about. And he was like, I cannot believe that you got that done. But it's, you know, like anything else, any other situation, like when you've got to do it, you've got to do it. And that was really important to him. And it was really stressing him out. So I was like, I'm going to put my mind to this and figure out how to get it done. And so it was reassuring to me, mm-hmm. you know, as a spouse and being home alone with, you know, a child and the dogs, and that I can do this. Like I can figure out and handle right. whatever is thrown my way.
Yes, we can.
Yes, exactly.
That's the one good thing about it. I think it really stretches us. Like mm-hmm. at first you're overwhelmed. You're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this by myself? But you have no choice.
Yep.
And you figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards you're like, I did okay on that.
That's right.
So, you know, we typically do think about natural disasters, but our state mission goes beyond that. The Guard does respond in those situations, but the Guard is also called upon to help out with anything, any kind of emergency that's going on within the state at the direction of the governor. During the last government shutdown, the State Guard helped in assisting to distribute food during the furloughs that happened to mm-hmm. employees. I think, you know, just in this area, maybe in the Midlands, they helped out like 350 families who were affected by those furloughs. There are still food banks operating out at McIntyre, I believe out at McCready Training Center through the USO. And then I believe there's also maybe an armory in Rock Hill that is still assisting with food distribution. So not just natural disasters, but, you know, other situations of emergency. The soldier and family readiness specialists are working on a continuous basis with groups like Harvest Hope, Helping Hands, and then other food banks across the state to help keep families fed. During COVID, the Guard assisted in giving immunizations in the Department of Corrections. They helped man testing sites. And during that time, they also distributed food and other necessities. So they're called upon to do that in addition to their overseas missions. Oh, and also, I believe during COVID, there was also a tornado that went through Seneca. So they had to respond to that as well. So, you know, Guard service stateside and within the state is multifaceted. And something else that just came to mind was there are a lot of times where things are going on in other states. And South Carolina is really good about loaning out our men and women to help out in equipment in other states when they too are experiencing difficulties. And likewise, they do the same for us.
Yeah, I remember that being a big part of like Helene, the rescue efforts in the mountains, mm-hmm. like bringing in the HART helicopter teams
right.
to go in and do search and rescue missions or to evacuate people or, you know, the helicopters bringing in water and, you know, whatever else was, you know, needed at the time. Like that was the forest fires, but like, you know, doing like a water brigade, you know, to help fight the forest fires when those were happening. So it's neat to see, like you said, the community and kind of the across the state lines that happens when one state needs that assistance and the other states, you know, National Guards jump in and pledge that, and they're right there with them, knowing that it will, you know, unfortunately, but fortunately, probably be returned at another point in time.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Kathy, I think you have some information about.
Yeah. During Helene, the Air Guard sent civil engineers to help the Army Guard open up the blocked roads and the washed away roads, and they sent food to feed troops, because you got to keep the troops fed while they're helping everybody else. They sent drivers to move the troops. They sent security personnel to help evacuate areas, and they also sent air traffic controllers to help the Army Guard pilots deliver supplies to North Carolina and help people in need. So they work together.
Well, and that's such a, I mean, a little bit of a departure from their normal mission, right? Like, it's not what they're trained for necessarily, but like they're willing to jump in and help and fill the need wherever it is.
So we have talked about the Guard's state mission, but there also is a federal mission, and we kind of talked about that in the beginning, but I'm going to read a sentence because it's a mouthful. The National Guard's federal mission is to serve as the combat-ready reserve for the U.S. Army and Air Force, supporting national defense and overseas combat operations. So what does that mean? Essentially that we can be deployed overseas to fight our country's wars.
Which I think surprises a lot of people.
I think you're right.
In the, you know, months leading up to Bill's deployment this time. So, and keep in mind, this is not the first time he's even been deployed. He's been deployed a few times, and he's been deployed with the National Guard before. But still, in that time leading up to it, there were, I mean, family members and close friends of ours who were just shocked that he was being sent, you know, overseas, especially at that point in a time where there wasn't like an active conflict, but he was still just, you know, that was that was the mission. So I think I don't know the exact numbers, but I know he has said before that like their units are always on some kind of like cyclical calendar.
Rotation.
Like it's a seven. Yeah. I think for the Army it's like 7 years, you know, for each unit. And like if their time comes up and there's no need, then they kind of cycle back into the line. But, you know, if it's their turn and there's some space they can fill, then whether it's, you know, an active duty or an active conflict or just kind of maintenance operations, they go. They're up for it. So it's something that I think most people just really have no idea about, even if you've been around it before.
Right. Well, and talking about those deployments, lengths of deployments can also vary. I knew in the Army Guard, deployments are typically are around a year. That includes the training leading up to it, you know, the time in country, the kind of debrief that happens on the backside. With Rob's deployments, I think his first one was 17 months. That was hard. Yeah. 14 months for the second one, and the third one I think was also 14 months. So that's, you know, that's a big chunk of time.
It's a long time, especially kids. They change so much year.
Well, I think about, you know, 17 months. That's like two grades in school.
That's a long time.
So, yeah, it can be hard.
It's a lot of stuff to miss on both sides, for him and for the kids. On the Air Guard side, it used to be 3 to 4 months, but you were on an 18-month cycle.
Okay.
They've changed now to a six-month. These are for planned deployments. Right. So for a six-month planned deployment, they spend about 3 2-week exercises or training missions before they go on a six-month deployment. So you kind of, those come up right before they leave, so you can add those together. One of the reasons it's shorter for the air side than the guard side is because of the plane maintenance. It's hard to bring everything when you travel with you that you need to maintain. Those planes are so high tech and have so many parts, and they have to have them perfect between every flight. So, and after a while they get, you know, worn out and they need some bigger things done. So they don't deploy for quite as long. And, you know, I think they try to keep it shorter because a lot of people do have other jobs. And I know that applies to you guys as well. But your husband had his own business. Mm-hmm. People don't think about that. Some people have to actually shut their business down
right.
when they deploy. Mm-hmm. Some can just leave their job and the job's waiting for them when they get back. And some lose, and a lot of people lose a lot of money because they're not getting paid their normal job pay. Right. They switch to just the military pay. My husband was full-time guard, so we didn't really have to worry about those kind of hiccups as much as other people did. But we did watch friends of ours kind of have a hard time shifting the whole job and then trying to slide back into the job. And if you have to restart your business again after being gone for that long.
Yeah, I will say that was difficult when Rob came home. But I will say that the community of Greenville took him back into that profession and, you know, referred out cases to them as he could or as they could. So, you know, that was helpful. But, yeah, it was a little trying there a little bit. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of the same, you know, challenges as the active duty. It's the long family separations, the managing life at home, managing the bills, you know, adjusting when those plans change. And I don't remember, I think Charlotte, you threw out a good term that I think we need to bring up, the ready reserve.
Yes.
So thinking about the National Guard as the always ready, you know, they train all year long. And then a lot of these units, because they're community based, people stay in the same, with the same unit for decades. Right. Mm-hmm. So they know each other really well. And yes, you know, new people come in and some people leave, but the core of that and of what they train for and how they train is the same. So they really get to know each other well. They feel comfortable. They feel comfortable working together. Mm-hmm. And so they're, you know, ready to go and well-trained when duty calls.
Right. Sometimes they actually pick up some of these emergency deployments before the active duty people, because they are together for so long and they are so cohesive. Mm-hmm. They're ready to go sometimes quicker than other ones are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like we have some interesting historical.
Well, we do. So I was going to say, you know, as I said earlier, think of this as your talking points episode. I thought it was interesting. So, you know, I did pick Rob's brain a little bit, but I had heard him speak this to a few groups in Greenville, businessmen and some legislators, as he was able to talk to them. And I just was floored, and I came away going, I needed my pom-poms, because that is just so awesome, you know, to know this. So we wanted to share some of this information. You may have heard about it in a college history class or high school class, but we're going to remind you. So during World War I, the 118th Infantry of South Carolina was attached to the 30th Infantry Division. Well, it was this group that broke through the Hindenburg Line during the Battle of the Somme. And the division was awarded 6 Congressional Medals of Honor, which was more than any other unit in the U.S. Army during World War I.
Wow.
Those are our
That's huge.
Men of South Carolina, yeah. or soldiers of South Carolina.
There's another interesting World War I story. So the 117th Engineer Brigade was originally established in 1917 for service in World War I in France, and they served under the 42nd Infantry Division. And so they were made up of companies from South Carolina and companies from California. Mm-hmm. And so they were called the Rainbow Division because of the span. Yeah. I mean, so think Costa. About the National Guard, like they're truly, you know, coming from across our entire nation to serve. And so then the 117th Engineer Brigade was reestablished in 2018. So 100 years later in South Carolina. And they are now deployed in the Middle East under the same division that they were deployed under in 1917 in France.
Wow.
So again, serving on, you know, the world stage in a different capacity, but like those historical ties are still there. It's kind of neat to think about.
I love hearing that. So since 9/11, South Carolina has deployed approximately 30,000 soldiers and airmen overseas to fight our country's wars.
That's a lot.
30,000. Mm-hmm. In 2019, the Russians were in Syria, and there was an incident Their military ran into some U.S. soldiers and hurt them. And the president decided that we needed to respond with aggression. So Central Command sent the infantry and Bradleys into Syria. Well, those soldiers were from the 4th of the 118th, who are based in Union, South Carolina, in the upstate of South Carolina. They served, like you said, on the world stage. They served as the, as my husband says, the point of the spear for U.S. strategic interest. We have a rich history here in South Carolina.
And currently, the South Carolina Air National Guard, which my son is part of, my husband used to be part of, they're deployed in support of the Epic Fury, and they've sent out air traffic controllers and pilots and other personnel over different areas of this conflict. Oh, I mean, hundreds.
And it's an active conflict.
Yeah. And this is not a planned deployment, so there is no end date. We don't know when they're coming home, when the job is done.
Right. Yeah, which is tough. I mean, you know, for the families, again, that are back here just kind of holding it together and figuring it out as you go and not really sure what is to come or how long it is to come for. So I think that's the other big part is, you know, the family side of the Guard for sure. So, you know, speaking of the family side of the Guard, I did have one message from a listener, Jennifer B, you know, said that it's amazing to her how many people don't understand how much the Guard does, saying, oh, I thought it was just weekends. You know, even when they get called up for hurricane duty, the assumption that they just show up in a matter of minutes, leave their families at home, and do their job. And when people don't understand that they have other jobs totally separate from what they do in the Guard, that they have to leave when they're called up to serve. So she says, I could go on and on, but it's been a great opportunity to tell people and promote all that the Guard does. So I do feel like our family members probably spend a great deal of time educating other people on exactly what their service member does. But, you know, the family side of the Guard is so big.
Mm-hmm. So it is so big. One of the things that I'm always struck by as I get to travel and meet new military spouses and families, a lot of these people who are my age also have children, nieces and nephews who are also in the military. And, you know, kind of refer to the Guard as the family business, because I do think that's true. I do think that, you know, service members serve as role models and they are to be admired. And it kind of makes sense that, you know, young people coming up look to the Guard and its service and understand that it is admirable.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of the leaders that was sending off our group to this last deployment, and he said he was really struck by the fact of how many of the young people going out he recognized as children of the people that he served with. And there was actually a few father-son that went out together on this deployment. Which, yay for them, tough for the mom to have husband and adult child go. But I think there's about a 10% legacy out there at the base where it's family members coming up. So even though we talk about the hardships and the struggles, there's a family cohesive aspect and a feeling, I think, of pride and patriotism that these kids come up with that is attractive to them, and they want to have an opportunity to do the same thing that their parent did and to serve.
Yeah. We see that a lot. I see that a lot on the Army side as well. I mean, Bill's unit alone has at least three family sets in it, whether it's siblings that are serving together or a parent-child situation where they are deployed together. And it's amazing for them to have that close, you know, camaraderie, I'm sure, over there with them. But man, for those family members that are still here, my heart goes out to them. I can't imagine having more than one person that you are so, you know, worried about. That must be hard to make it not all consuming.
Wow.
I guess in a way it would be good though. Like if my husband was over there with my son, I would feel like he'd had somebody watching over him.
Yeah.
Like Not that he needs that. I mean, he's
right.
He's trained. He's prepared. But it would be better for me,
right?
You know, to know that he had somebody keeping a special eye on him.
But then going back to, you know, the family aspect and serving together, like, I am sure that there are lots of people there that knew or know your husband and so have a special interest in, you know, in looking out
That's
for them.
True.
But the family aspect of people having served together for so long in the Guard.
We just ran into people not long ago, and Charlotte introduced me to them, and they were like, Bridgers, are you Austin's mom? Are you Cletus's wife? So it was like they knew both my husband and my son, which was kind of cool.
That's very neat. Yeah. So, and just like the service within the unit kind of being a family business, I think the fact that the Guard is so rooted in the communities makes the community support part so strong for them. You know, we've seen that in this deployment of just the community really rallying behind their unit and wanting to support them with care packages and things like that and reaching out and checking in on families. But it also, I think, makes it challenging because you are not all necessarily super geographically close. You're not living in the same neighborhood like you would if you were on post or on a base. So I think the Guard families sometimes have to work a little harder to get that connection, you know, which we've talked about in some past episodes. But it is there for sure. You just have to kind of seek it out a little bit more sometimes. But, you know, that's one of the unique things about the Guard. So, you know, kind of to wrap it up, I think hopefully, you know, you've learned some things today. I think the National Guard truly does represent a very unique form of service. It's more than just that basic training schedule. It's more than a part-time commitment. It's a lot more than what I think most people initially think of. So it truly blends that military duty with the community service and some personal sacrifice for sure.
Right. So in reflecting, what is one thing that you learned today about the Guard that you didn't know before? And I'm going to challenge you in a couple ways to share that information. And I would also say use the link from this podcast to answer questions. Sometimes it can be, you know, exhausting to repeatedly explain to people what your spouse is doing, what your child is doing, what the Guard is. Just say, let me do you a favor. I'm going to send you a link to a podcast that explains the whole thing for you. And if you have any questions, come back and talk to me afterwards.
I love that. There you go.
And please write to us on familyguideons@gmail.com. We want your stories. We want your input. We want your feedback. We want to know what you learned, what you would like to know more about, because this is about you.
That's right. So like Kathy said, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider sharing it with someone you think might be interested in learning more about the National Guard, but also hearing more about some of the things that are the challenges that are facing our National Guard families, our military families, and some of the good things too. And we would love to hear from service members highlighting their appreciation for their spouses and all that their spouses do to help them, you know, in their missions. So if you have those emails, and we want you to, please email them to familyguideons@gmail.com. And as always, thank you for listening to Family Guidons from the Bluff Road Readiness Center in Columbia, South Carolina, to wherever you may be. Until next time.